This is a test of the emergency broadcast system. The broadcasters of your area, in voluntary cooperation with federal, state, and local authorities, have developed this system to keep you informed in the event of an emergency.
You sounded like Dirty Harry just then.
I'm a log. Half man, half dog. I'm my own best friend.
I'm gonna make him an offer, Jim.
Not even supposed to be here today.
I'm your huckleberry.
And what about Brett Fogg?
Bruh.
To hell with Brett.
Inconceivable!
Welcome once again to another edition of the BoxOfficeBoredom.com movie podcast. Once again, I'm Jason here, your 6'3" ATM of movie information.
I'm Isaac, and I'm quite a bit shorter and maybe a little less information, but I'm still here with my opinion.
As always, we are ready to help you guys plan your next movie night. We'll do our section called See It or Skip It, and joining with us for our last section of the podcast will be Matt Van Winkle, and we'll be discussing the movie 500 Days of Summer. It's going to be a completely open discussion filled with spoilers and whatnot, so we completely understand if you want to turn off the podcast after you get to the 500 Days of Summer part, because obviously we don't want to ruin a movie for you. Without further ado, let's just kick off the show with our movie trivia question of the week.
Let's hear it.
All right. Well, for this movie trivia question of the week, we decided that we're actually going to give you a movie quote and that we're not going to give away on the podcast as usual. We're actually going to put up an open challenge to someone to put up the answer to the movie quote trivia question on our Facebook fan page. So after we reveal it, and jump on the Facebook fan page, post the answer on the fan page wall. So the movie quote is, "Can I confess something? I tell you this as an artist. I think you'll understand. Sometimes, when I'm driving on the road at night, I see two headlights coming toward me, fast. I have this sudden impulse to turn the wheel quickly, head on into the oncoming car. I can anticipate the explosion, the sound of shattering glass, the flames rising out of the flowing gasoline." Once again, if you know what movie that quote is from, jump on the BoxOfficeBoredom.com Facebook fan page and let us know. Let's head on into the next section, which is See It or Skip It. All right, the See It section is where Isaac and I talk a little bit about the movies we've seen in the last few weeks since our last show. Give you a few-minute review of why we think you should either see it or skip it. I'll just start off with one, and we'll let Isaac chime in right after with one of his. So first off, one of the movies I saw over the last few weeks was the movie called Young at Heart. And for those of you who weren't familiar with Young at Heart or know what it was a documentary that was made about a bunch of senior citizens that sang rock and roll music as part of a program that they do at their senior center. And these senior citizens go on this big concert for their hometown. And along the way, you get to see them learning all of this rock music that they just can't quite get a grasp on, because, you know, it's just, you hear them all saying they love listening to opera music. And this teacher, who looks kind of like a cross between maybe Bob Ross and Anthony Bourdain mixed together, is trying to teach them rock and roll. And all in all, it's a very good movie. The only thing I had a problem with was I wasn't sure what the director was trying to tell us. At one minute, I thought he was trying to show us this heartfelt documentary about these old people who are just enjoying life. And then the next minute, he's showing crazy music videos that seemed almost mocking of these old people. And so I really had a hard time deciding if he truly appreciative of the people in it, or if he was mocking them, I guess. But either way, I think that if you, regardless of what your intentions are and regardless of what its intentions are, I still think that the movie was a lot of fun, and I'd highly suggest it. So I, out of I guess I would say for Young at Heart, I would say see it.
I just first wanted to say, I was about to ask if that was supposed to be a comedy or not, just because the idea of it sounds pretty funny. But anyways, I've got a pretty good list of movies from the last couple weeks, but one of the first ones I saw over the course of the last few weeks was We Own the Night, starring Joaquin Phoenix and Mark Wahlberg. And basically what it is it's kind of the story of Joaquin Phoenix is the son of a police chief, and Mark Wahlberg is as well, and they live in New York. And Mark Wahlberg is on the, you know, he's in the police department, he's a cop, and Joaquin Phoenix is kind of a sleazy club owner, and he's kind of a mob, mixed in with the mobsters. And what happens is it just goes through the course of basically violence from the police to the mobsters throughout the city. And it has a really, I don't want to give too much of it away, but it has a really interesting connection between their family, because being on different sides of, you know, the crime scene in this movie, Joaquin Phoenix ends up having to make a choice between basically money and success or his family. And it's really interesting to see what he does in the end, but it's a really, it's pretty much high intensity throughout the whole movie, a lot of action, and I thought it was a pretty good movie. I would say see it.
The other night, I had the chance to see the movie Whip It, the Ellen Page movie directed by Drew Barrymore, about this girl from a small Texas town that starts playing roller derby. And from start to finish, this is a very cliche-type movie. You know almost what's going to happen from start to finish. This teenager that their parents are very – or the mother is very into, like, the whole pageant scene and whatnot, wants her to be this pretty, pristine, proper, you know, little girl. And she wants nothing of it. And, you know, so she just decides to start sneaking out and playing roller derby. You know, like I said, from start to finish, you know exactly how it's going to go. There will be that scene where mom finds out about it, and, you know, you have the big thing of maybe a pageant, you know, that's going on might just happen to line up with, you know, a roller derby date or day for, like, a championship game. I mean, I don't think I'm really spoiling anything. Anybody can see this a mile away out of watching the movie. However, you know, it was a lot of fun. I actually really did enjoy it. It's got some very quirky, weird characters. The roller derby team names are hilarious. I mean, she's part of the Hurl Scouts. And you know, there's just the names they would come up for, you know, these teams, was hilarious. And then every member of a roller derby team apparently had to have their own nickname. And so, she got named Babe Ruthless, and we have a Smashley Simpson, and just, you know, just the dumb names made it all, worthwhile. You know, and the other thing I really liked was that Daniel Stern, who, if that name doesn't ring a bell, think Home Alone, remember Harry and Marv, Harry was the big tall one, if I remember correct, the non-Joe Pesci one. Well, yes, the non-Joe Pesci, robber is a father. And it was hilarious to see him as Ellen Page's father, and he really fit that fatherly figure quite well. So as far as Whip It goes, I say see it.
Recently in one of my friend's dorm rooms, I was watching the movie Thank You for Smoking, starring Aaron Eckhart. You might have seen him in The Dark Knight playing Harvey Dent. But this was a pretty interesting movie. The plot I thought was really clever. It was based around Aaron Eckhart plays a spokesperson for mainly a big tobacco company, and basically his job is to go around to the media, to public relation involved people, and try to argue the fact that there is no proof that cigarettes are bad for you. And so he's basically trying to defend cigarettes as his job, and it's really interesting because he basically is trying to make the case the whole time how arguing can win you any. If you argue correctly, you can win anything. And, you know, I was kind of interested in that part of the movie. But basically, I thought it was a pretty clever plot. But unfortunately to me, one, you know, kind of thing that turned me off to this movie was that I guess it wasn't really a laugh out loud kind of movie. It wasn't really that kind of comedy that you know, is really has the funny jokes and just like really gets you laughing. You know, I mean, there were a couple jokes here and there, and you know, there are some pretty good characters. J.K. Simmons plays one of the top guys in the company, and he does a pretty good job at that. He's pretty amusing. But I think the word amusing is kind of what sums up this movie. There's nothing really that made it to me, you know, all that hilarious. I found it a little more clever. This is a tough one for you. I'd probably say skip it unless you got time.
Well, to chime in on that one, being it is something that I own in my DVD collection, that was the type of movie that, for me, was right up my alley. Dark comedy, more of a dark, dry humor. Very sarcastic. This great those satire-filled movies like that, Wag the Dog comes to mind as well. Stuff like that, where it's not filled with the laugh-out-loud laughs. Isaac's absolutely right on the money with that. Sometimes that's, you know, thick satire that they just pour on. Really works for me. And for me, I mean, I enjoyed it. So moving on, one of the other movies I finally got around to seeing was a movie called Battle for Terra. This is an animated CG movie put out by, I lost track of who it is, maybe Lionsgate, who I don't remember anymore. But either way, Battle for Terra was pretty much one of their first big attempts to, you know, come do their own animated thing. And what they ended up doing is, even though it came out before Avatar did, is they really just told the Avatar story for kids in a, you know, 90-minute movie. And, you know, it was – I wanted to say I really liked this movie, and I do, but I know that there are other movies that have done it so far, you know, so much better in the past. I mean, it's the same thing you see with Dances with Wolves, with Avatar, with The Last Samurai, you know. You could probably throw a few others out. Guy shows up to this this place where there are natives there that he's supposed to study and understand, or, you know, the humans, in this case, the humans are needed something off the planet Terra, and they decide to destroy the place. And then all of a sudden he starts to wonder, well, because I befriended them, should I fight on their side or not? So, yeah, I mean, for a kid's movie, a family movie, yeah, I enjoyed it. But as something that you must see, I don't feel like I should honestly say see it for, you know, everybody. But I say see it for a family type thing. It did have a lot of great voice actors in there, some, you know, and they all work fairly well. The only one that stuck out that didn't work for me was Luke Wilson playing, like, one of the, I guess, this very hero-like astronaut, you know, supposedly this great soldier-type person as, like, the lead. And to me, it just didn't work for me because I kept thinking, like, Luke Wilson was just going to start rattling off about why AT&T is better than Verizon halfway through or something. So, but all in all, like I said, a family movie, it's not bad. I've seen worse out there. Do not expect anything great when it comes to animation. I mean, this stays pretty much in tune with any DreamWorks or Paramount-style animation. It's not quite Pixar quality, but yeah, all in all, I'd say, with a lot of hesitation, if you're a family, I'd say see it. Otherwise, I think I would say skip it.
All right, well, I got another one I've seen, and this is a favorite to a few of our listeners, so I definitely had to bring this one out of the DVD shelf. But I watched over last weekend, I watched I Love You, Man, and that one came out 2008 summer, and that was pretty, I mean, I'm just going to say it straight up hilarious. I'm just going to say, before I even start to describe it, if you haven't seen it yet, you need to see it.
I have seen it, actually. And I definitely enjoyed it. Yes, I definitely did. I felt bad for Paul Rudd's character. It was almost uncomfortable to watch at times, but
it really was, yeah.
But I definitely liked it. Yeah, yes, carry on with your...
But anyways, and I know you've done a review, and Jason's review can be checked out at boxofficeboredom.com. But I Love You, Man, to me, I'll give you a little synopsis if you're not familiar with it. Basically, Paul Rudd plays a character who is about to get married, but he realizes he has, you know, no best man for his wedding because he doesn't have any friends besides women, and mainly being his wife, or his fiance, excuse me. And so he goes on a mission to find best friend. And he goes through a really funny, like, course of trying to find a male friend. And the whole movie to me is just so funny because of the irony. Just like, it's what, you know, a guy would be doing to try to find a girl. He's doing that to find a guy, and he keeps going back to his wife looking for advice as if his wife were one of his best friends and she was helping him with a relationship. And I just find that totally hilarious, the whole situation. But anyways, then comes in the movie Jason Segel, and he adds a hilarious component to that movie as well. Just he does a great job in that movie in just his acting, and as well as his, you know, his just kind of the way he goes about, you know, doing his daily life as his character. He does a great job. There's so many, you know, memorable lines in that movie. A lot of jokes, but they're all funny. And I mean, it's a funny plot along with a funny, you know, funny set of jokes. And I just think it combines for one giant laugh, and it's a great movie to see. So I definitely say see it.
Last up on the list for me, I saw the movie Extract, the latest Mike Judge comedy. So again, I did write a review on the website, so I won't go into it too much. Mike Judge always has been I love Office Space, so I've always excited to see him come out with another movie, especially when I found out he was doing more of a blue-collar worker type movie, because he had, you know, done such a great job with more of the white-collar environment in Office Space. And so this time he follows basically a bunch of factory workers around. But unfortunately, this one, just something felt off in this movie. You know, I wanted to love it, but he was just trying it. He made the characters too wild, too eccentric. They were, you know, just caricatures of, you know, a character, you know, an overblown character in a movie. They were just too much for me. At the same time, he had just ridiculous plot things going on that didn't need to, you know, need to be there. He had this, I just completely forgot her name. The girl from, she's Meg on the Family Guy and
that
70s show. And either way, you guys know who I'm talking about, hopefully.
Oh yeah, hold on, it'll come to me.
But they have her there, and she's trying to, I guess, rip off the company because she's a con artist, and that storyline doesn't need to be there at all. It seemed awkward, out of place, and weird. He has this next door neighbor that's just, they take that character and just make it too overbearing and too ridiculous, and there isn't really a good reason that he's even there most of the time. Other than apparently he ties up the end of the movie somehow in a, like, a completely ridiculous sort of way. All in all, once again, I have to say this is a miss for Mike Judge. I wanted something, you know, something great out of it. I'd say I got something that was just okay at best. The best part about the movie was Ben Affleck, I think, in it, just playing the pill-popping bartender that, you know, just gives misguided advice to his best friend, who's Jason Bateman, who's running the factory. But all in all, even that just didn't feel right. There was a gigolo, I guess, that fell in love with Bateman's wife for some reason. That, you know, it just another ridiculous side plot that I'm not sure worked. So all in all, Extract, as much as I want to say see it, and I really do, I still think I'm going to have to say skip it.
And that one, the Meg Family Guy, Mila Kunis is the name I was
That
looking
is
for.
The name. There we go. So thank you, Isaac, for that there.
All right, Facebook users, I've got a box office update here. First in the box office this week was Shutter Island with $41 million. Next was Valentine's Day, followed by Percy Jackson and The Wolfman. And now I want to ask you... followed by Avatar, then The Wolfman. But I want to ask you, users, if you've seen any of these movies recently, which ones did you like the best, and which ones would you say to skip it? You can post these on our Facebook page. Anywhere on there would be fine. And just include anything you want to tell us about any of these movies. But, yeah, let's get some, you know, input on the recent movies in the box office.
Very much so. I, you know, try not to go through, you know, on the fan page, obviously, and be, I really love it in the end when, you know, this happens, you know, but still, yeah, we want to know what you're thinking. So feel free to jump in, chime in, let us know, you know, throw it up on the wall there or go to the discussion section, throw some stuff up there as well. So along with that, Isaac, we might as well throw out a few of the people who have been visiting the site may have noticed this. We've kind of got a link. If you go to boxofficeboredom.com, it actually just has a, you know, sort of broken link saying we're moving. We are moving to a new server very soon. So the site is getting a complete new look thanks to actually one of the Facebook fans, David Gengler, is redoing the site for us. He's been working away at it trying to... We're moving it over to a different server, giving it a new look. Really excited about that. So for now, we apologize for any inconvenience there is. Still, if you go to boxofficeboredom.com, you can still click the link to go to, you know, the old site. In the next week or so, there may not be as many reviews thrown up just because we are morphing over to the new one. But looking very forward to seeing a new look to the site. We hope that you'll check it out with us.
Oh, yeah. Definitely want to... thank David for that, and, you know, just, I just want to let David know, stay classy, we love him.
All right, how's that for a cheesy intro to a new section of the podcast? A few weeks ago, we put up a thing on our Facebook fan page where we announced that we were looking for some of your input for the podcast. We didn't quite tell y'all what we were doing, but we just wanted some of the fans to chime in, thought it'd be fun to have some fan interaction there. What we went and asked people was if they could list off their top five relationship movies. And we got some varied responses, and we thought we'd share with you guys first, you know, what you guys said also, and then we'd share our list as well. So starting off, one of the first lists we got was Mike Frohwine. The Mike suggested Rear Window, Casablanca, Arsenic and Old Lace, The Princess Bride, and Rocky.
And next we got Tamara McDowell. Her top five were Kissing Jessica Stein, Love Jones, Eternal Sunshine, and Of the Spotless Mind.
That's right. She only had three. She had this thing that said she'd get back to us because she had to get back to work and wanted to stop being a slacker. But that's all right. Anyhow, Ryan Peterson jumped in saying Love Actually, Groundhog Day, WALL-E, Princess Bride, and The Notebook. And he also mentioned an honorable mention of Ghost.
And next up, we got Deuce Jessen. He has Notting Hill, She's All That, 10 Things I Hate About You, Top Hat, and apparently he likes the dancing scene. And he also liked Sympathy for Lady Vengeance.
All right. Along with that, Baron Biore chimed in, also agreeing with Deuce on Sympathy for Lady Vengeance. First off, Matt, do you have any that you'd like to add to the list? So, we do have Matt Van Winkle joining us in this section, so...
Okay, a couple that I had would be a couple movies I've seen recently. Dear John was a pretty good one I saw. It was a good relationship movie. And also, when it was, I think it was last year I saw it, was Knights in Rodanthe. I don't know if you've seen that one, Jason.
I didn't watch it. I watched it from the booth window and was watching a very scratched print, so I wasn't paying a whole lot of attention. But, yes, I know what it is, at least.
That was a couple, too, that I... Also, The Notebook. I don't know if you guys agree with that or not. I like The Notebook.
I would definitely agree with that one, Matt. Okay. The Notebook's on my list
okay.
as well.
Matt, I just have to ask, did you know that all of those are Nicholas Sparks books before you listed them off?
I didn't know Knights in Rodanthe was, but I knew Dear John and The Notebook
I'm
were.
Pretty sure every one of them is a Nicholas Sparks book.
Yep. I think,
so,
yep, you're right.
Yeah.
Yep, it is.
So definitely the Nicholas Sparks thing. All right, for my list, I listed off in... Well, I'd say no particular order, but at number five, I put in Love Actually. At number four, I have Say Anything. At number three, I have Casablanca. At number two, I have Annie Hall. And taking the number one spot is my man John Cusack in High Fidelity.
Oh, of course. Should have known.
And Isaac, how about you? What'd you come up with?
Well, I'm not gonna give you five just because, I haven't had much time to prepare for this, but I'm gonna agree with a couple people here. Ryan Peterson, our Facebook user, and also Matt just mentioned The Notebook. Definitely on my list. Casablanca, it's been on a few people's lists now, but that's also one of mine. It's classic. And I also wanted to bring up, a pretty recent film. I'm not sure if it's, top five, but I just thought it was a pretty good relationship movie. Was Up in the Air. And even though it's about more than just relationships, I thought it brought an interesting view towards, you know, the whole relationship, plot that's going on, because it's a terribly unhappy ending for George Clooney in that movie.
And I'd agree also, with that, Isaac. I would agree with that for sure.
You'd agree with that as well. But also, yep. Not only her, but, Anna Kendrick in that movie also has some relationship troubles of her own, but grows in that aspect of her life by the end of the movie as well. So I thought it was an interesting movie as far as relationships go. And so I thought I'd throw that one in there as well. But I think my number one relationship movie, and try not to laugh here, but I think it's Titanic.
Oh.
Dude, that was also on, I was gonna say that one too.
You know, I can agree to put that on my, on a list. It's not quite as high up there, I don't think, for me. But yeah, I was just very glad that there wasn't a Gerard Butler comment on there. P.S. I love you. I expected the list to be like P.S. I love you and, what was the other, The Ugly Truth and, you know, all those. So I'm very proud of you, Isaac.
Well, yeah, I tried to not go too overboard on Gerard Butler this week.
And, well, the reason we all we're asking for the top five relationship movies was because we are gonna now talk about, the movie 500 Days of Summer. We do want to give you a big warning that if you haven't seen the movie and really hate people who spoil movies for you, this would be a very good time to turn off the podcast. We promise you won't miss anything afterwards other than us just signing off. So if you don't want to know about 500 Days of Summer and have any spoilers, turn off the podcast now. For those of you who are sticking around, what we decided to do was bring Matt on, Isaac, and myself and just talk a little bit about the film. What we thought about it, let's get filled with spoilers and whatnot. Matt, since you're our guest, first off, what'd you think of the movie? Any thoughts?
Jason, I really liked the movie. Let me just start off and say, the first time I watched this movie, I was in California and I was driving down the coast down to LA. So pretty good setting to be watching this romantic movie. I really liked it. I thought it had a great character development between, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, I think his name is, and Zooey Deschanel. First thoughts of Zooey Deschanel in this movie, before this movie, I really didn't like her as an actress per se, but, she kind of grew on me in this movie, and she did a really good job in it, I would say.
I think I agree with you. I liked the movie, but I definitely didn't love the movie.
Yeah.
I felt like, it was a bit, cliched, I guess, a bit. It wanted to be this quirky, weird little, romantic type movie, and I didn't think it had done quite as good of a job as others I have seen. Like I said, when you looked at my top five list, I mean, I had High Fidelity there and I had Annie Hall, two movies that have at least similar plot lines in my mind, you know, that rehashing of what's going on in a relationship, why did it go wrong, you know, or why am I so attached to this person, blah, blah, blah. And I just felt like this one was trying way too hard to try to achieve that level, and just be quirky and weird at the same time. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, well, go ahead, Isaac, go ahead.
Sorry, I was just gonna jump in right there and, I'm gonna disagree with Jason on this one. I actually thought 500 Days of Summer was an awesome movie. I thought, it really, showed a lot of like, not only like, going through a breakup and stuff, but just like, I loved how it just showed the story of somebody's relationship. And it only showed one person's relationship, and it was always obviously counting down, different days and showed different times in the, you know, course of the relationship. But I really loved just having the story of just, two regular people's, relationship. I thought it was simple, but it ended up being really complex just because, as everybody who's been through a relationship knows, even if it wasn't quite that long, maybe it was only, you know, a couple of years, but a couple of years in a relationship, so much happens. And I think this movie really showed that well and showed how their emotions changed throughout the whole time. And also, I did really like how they would jump back and forth from different days. They didn't show you the progression chronologically. I really liked, I thought it was very interesting how they would go from, you know, the very beginning to the very end, and then they'd jump around in the middle. I thought that was pretty unique, and I was pretty impressed by that, actually.
I definitely agree with you. I liked, I liked the idea behind the let's jump around a bit. At first, I was a little torn on it, wasn't sure I was really, you know, all with that idea, but it grew on me a bit, and as I really got thinking, if they would have played it straight from day 1 to 500, I think we would have had an extremely boring movie there.
I agree with you. I was just thinking that myself.
So, I mean, therefore, I think that worked, at least on some level. I also found it a bit, I don't want to say annoying isn't the word for it, but I found that skipping around a tad bit irritating at times. And I don't know. Did anybody else have that issue at all, or was it just me?
Well, a little bit. You kind of got a sense of how these people were feeling though. Through they were kind of jumping through the relationship, like when she says that, "What are we doing here?" And like, They showed a scene where he was in the elevator all happy, you know, remember after they had slept together. And then he was walking through the park and it was that dance happy scene. And then when he gets off the elevator, they kind of jumped. Remember, they jump ahead of time to after she dumped him. And I really felt for him then because it was kind of it's a tough time for him. And I don't know. I liked that part of the movie a lot.
Yeah, definitely. And Jason, I kind of agree with you as far as like some of the jumping around was a little annoying just because it felt like you were just starting to get into it, and then it would take you somewhere else. But I do think every little piece of, you know, their lives that they showed was just, you know, trying to tell you a little more about their relationship and about which, you know, about each person as them, you know, as individuals as well. So I think that even though it was maybe a little irritating at first, I think in the end it kind of all makes sense. Like, I think it all you know, you realize it had to be like jumping around. As far as jumping around goes, I think you realize in the end, the clips that you saw were the most meaningful things between the two people in that movie.
Fair enough. And Matt brought up a scene that at least stuck out to me, and that was the dance scene thing after he gets off an elevator, where all of a sudden it turns into some weird, I don't want to say Broadway-esque type musical or something.
Yeah.
And to me, that scene where it worked for Matt actually took me out of the movie for those few minutes. And I was just like, you know, because up until then, it felt like it was trying to be this very real movie, you know, of just two, I guess they wanted to portray themselves as ordinary yet quirky people.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it just turns into some weird dance number. And I was like, what in the world is going on at this point? And to me, it really drug me out. And so I guess that emotion that Matt said he felt right afterwards, to me, I'm still sitting there going, what am I watching? You know, so
I actually really like that scene. Are you talking about like the part where he just he gets down and he starts walking in the street and starts kind of dancing around with everybody and singing and stuff?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. I actually really like that scene. And here's why. I think it makes it be a little more real too. But here's why. I think when in a relationship, especially with a guy like that, a pretty ordinary guy like that, when something happens big in your relationship, he comes out of that feeling like he's on top of the world. And what kind of guy who has, you know, been in a relationship like that can say that they haven't had that feeling before? They can, because every guy, you know, has that feeling where, you know, they wake up in the morning and they feel like they're having the greatest day of their lives. And I love that part when he looks into the car window and he sees Harrison Ford's reflection as his own. And it made me laugh because it's just like, it just kind of exemplifies like how awesome, you know, the new kind of relationship makes you feel, or something really big that happened in a newfound relationship makes you feel. It makes you feel like, you know, you're the biggest stud on earth right now. And I thought, I thought that was an interesting part of the movie. It was kind of, I think that is something everybody has been through, that feeling.
Matt, your thoughts?
And Jason, you say that scene kind of threw you out of the movie a little bit. I really don't see that, because throughout the whole movie, I kind of noticed a weirdness, a kind of unique sense of the movie, how that, you know, they kind of did a couple like black and white scenes, like in a French movie. I don't know. Remember they went to that?
Yeah, I noticed that as well.
Fair enough. And I think that was another scene that did this, had that same effect on me, but carry on.
It was a little weird, but I think that might have been later in the movie, actually, but I think that it kind of took a different tone throughout the whole movie, but it didn't throw me off as much as it did for you, I don't think.
Okay.
It didn't really throw me off either. If anything, for me, it kind of added to the movie, but...
Okay. Along with things that point, since I seem to be the one who's being the only one who's more anti 500 Days of Summer here, one of the things that I guess kind of drove me up a wall was the multiple times at IKEA, where they're hanging out there and that what, where they're just wandering around and pretending, oh, I'll watch TV, and I'll do this and that. And to me, it seemed like I wasn't sure if they were trying to be original there or saying, look, this is just quirky and weird again, or if they were just trying to, if that was something, teenagers do nowadays. I don't remember doing this as a kid or even as a young adult there. I guess there's still some time. I'm not quite 30 yet, but.
I think they were trying to show how, weird of a couple they were. They were kind of like opposites, but they're really, they were trying to do this quirky, weird thing, in the movie that it worked for me, but I don't know. Isaac?
Okay, so clarify again. Which part is this?
When they're in IKEA and they're looking around the kitchens.
I think that was just, I actually liked that part too, just because I thought it was funny how, first of all, they were, with them two together, they both, were really outgoing. And I mean, we all knew that Summer in that movie is really outgoing, but I think it was interesting how Tom Hansen, it was mainly showing how his life was changed by Summer. I think that was just another example about how Summer was affecting him and how she was changing his life. And I think we can all agree, Tom Hansen is basically the main character in this movie. And so I consider it being showing a change throughout his lifetime or throughout his relationship. That was just one of the changes, how much she'd affected him that he would go into an IKEA and start running around the store and jumping on furniture. He would have never even thought of doing that before, but that's the biggest effect Summer had on him. And I think that's just another way of showing how in love he was.
Fair enough. Maybe I didn't even really look at it quite from that standpoint. Maybe I was going in with this, a completely different, sort of idea of what this movie was going to be, and then was just like, this is what I'm walking into. And it's not a bad thing. It was just, it wasn't what I was expecting it to be. So.
Yeah, it wasn't what I was expecting it to be either. But then again, I really wasn't expecting a whole lot, but it ended up being a lot different than I thought as well.
Back, did you go in with did you get what you expected out of it when you walked in, or?
I think so. I don't know. I thought that was a really funny scene, but it was kind of, like Isaac said, it kind of explained how he changed when he met her. I liked it. It worked for me.
I think that I'd like to bring up is your guys' thoughts about Summer herself. I mean, did you guys love her? Did you hate her? What were your thoughts there as you went through this movie?
As a guy, I would kind of say that I didn't really like her. I'll tell you a couple reasons why. Throughout the whole movie, she kind of said, I'm not looking for anything serious. And that kind of just that's like a shot in the heart for a guy that is in the, really likes this girl.
Agree.
I thought you would agree with me, Isaac. I don't know. It's just, as a guy, you're like, oh man, this sucks, but you really want to win over this girl. And that was kind of the whole part of the whole theme of the movie. Isaac, you agreed with me on that?
Oh, definitely. Especially how, I mean, you can really see this too out from, Joseph Gordon-Levitt's point of view in this movie, but when Summer says, I don't want this to be a serious thing, I'm not looking for a relationship, but then, she goes and, they do it in the shower, or they just, do all sorts of crazy things together, and then she just, the way she acts towards him really makes him think that he likes her, and she invited him over to her place one night, and apparently that's very rare for Summer to invite a guy over to her place. And I remember Tom at one point explodes at Summer and says, you say you don't want this to be serious, but we're doing so many serious things together. and he lists off a few, you know, intimate things that they would do that would, you know, would normally be between a boyfriend and girlfriend. They would not be between friends. And she says during various points, you know, are we ready to be friends or we need to be friends? And she wasn't really acting like a friend, but I guess that was just Summer's personality.
Fair enough. And I had a very huge love-hate type relationship with the Summer character. Every time that, you know, there were things that would stand out, I was like, okay, you know, there are things I like about her. They have similar interests and this and that. And there were times I saw them fitting together as a perfect couple. And then, like Isaac said, all of a sudden she would turn around and do something, you know, or say something, and you'd be like, wow, you know, that's really cold. How dare you, you know?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden she'd go back to be, you know, you'd see something else. You're like, oh, okay. And maybe part of that had to do with the skipping around, too, kept me on edge as to if I loved her, hated her, you know.
Yeah.
Because it,
yeah, I would get that,
cause at one moment you're like, all right, cool. Then the next minute, oh, you see what that evolves into. Like, wow, what a bit.
It's a lot different. It's a lot different than any other romantic movie that you see, because most romantic movies don't skip back and forth. You like the person, then you like the person, then you end up liking them in the end, or you end up not liking them in the end. And that, yeah, it kind of jumped around in this movie. It was kind of different.
And along with that, I don't know if Summer's completely, to blame. I mean, she's a very complex, weird sort of character anyhow. And I mean, she flat out said, hey, Tom, I don't want anything serious. And yet he was going headfirst into this like it was going to be the most serious relationship of his life. And so in a way, he was a little, almost a pathetic sort of character in a way, because he just went head over heels for this girl that really told him, hey, look, you seem to be kind of the flavor of the week, I guess. Yeah, come on along, you know. That just didn't seem right to me.
Well, I mean, one thing to think about is also – She did say she didn't want anything, so Tom should have known that from the beginning. But as the relationship moved on, and they were together for 500 days, which is a pretty long time, and so as it moved on and she became more intimate with him, he probably figured, you know, she's growing within our relationship. It's becoming more than a friendship. But also, I think it varies. If you're a guy watching this movie, you really get a different idea of Summer than if you're a girl. If you're a girl, I think Summer's more of a fun, loving, like, really, you know, interesting character, really unique. And I also think that a lot of girls would think that she stated what she wanted, and, you know, that's what she ended up doing. But I think, on the other hand, from a guy's perspective, it feels, you know, you feel that, oh, man, you just, like, you took a blow to the heart there. Like, all the guys feel bad for Tom, because a lot of guys, I mean, not to say girls haven't been through this before, but I think a lot of guys can relate to Tom as, you know, maybe going head over heels into the relationship more so than Summer actually wanted to. And it feels to me as if, like, especially us three being guys, we're all kind of saying that, you know, Summer, you know, kind of did more than, she became more than friends, so she shouldn't have backed off like that. But I don't know, it'd be interesting to see a girl's perspective on this.
Fair enough. And if I remember right, I don't even know how long they were actually together, but wasn't the 500 days just him coping and getting over with it too? Like, did they even make it a year? I mean, it jumped around so much I didn't know, but I remember at one point, you know, when we were at day 400, they pretty much hated each other at this point. I remember that.
It was like the 500 days that, like, she was in his life, I think, was kind of what it was when he first met her. That was when the day started, wasn't it?
And then
at the end of the movie
it starts 500 back to 1, it gets clicked back over.
Yep.
But yeah, right. I don't even think they were, you know, talked to each other until day 40 or something you know, so.
They didn't even start dating for a long time. That's true. That's a good way to bring that up. That's a good point.
And according to Summer, they may never have started dating. I don't really know.
That is true. That is very true. And there's another interesting thing. Like we were talking about before, it felt like, you know, Tom was getting the blunt end of this. But maybe you're right, Jason. He really was just the pathetic character who was falling head over heels. But either way, you feel bad for him either way.
Yes, you do. And I think that one thing I found interesting was, like, you mentioned how it was in some ways, like, most guys at least can kind of feel from, you know, that standpoint, you know, if they haven't been through that situation, at least they're empathetic towards it. And, you know, I think you are right with that. And I think that was what the director, you know, was essentially doing. It was his own story, you know. I forgot who Summer, you know, was, but at the beginning they're like, you know, blah, blah, blah to, you know, this movie has no real relation to, was it Becky somebody, you know, and then just a bitch, you know, and they're just like, and so I laughed at that a little bit at that and was like, all right, look, he's just pouring his heart out of something he already knows. So maybe you are onto something that, you know, it is something people do go through and whatnot. So, yeah, I guess I was looking for a way that it was going, you know, a start to finish relationship instead of maybe it was laid out because that's what it seemed like to me. But then when it was jumping around, it felt like maybe that was just him rehashing everything in his mind. And, you know, I don't know. Was that it's been a few weeks since I've seen it, but was it supposed to be him reviewing everything through his mind until we get to the end scene, or is it?
I'm not really sure.
I would say, like, I think that has something to do with it, just because, I mean, at one point in the movie they say something like, one of his Tom's sister or his friend says something like, you're only remembering the good times, and then they flash back to a bad time. And so maybe those were supposed to be, like, you know, kind of random memories. But also, if it's going, you know, from start to finish in their relationship, like you're suggesting you were expecting, mm-hmm. Jason, I think that would also kind of mess up this whole, like, thing that we were just discussing about whether Tom was in a real relationship or whether he was making it a relationship. Because if it goes from start to finish, it would be a lot easier to see that. But since it's kind of staggered and they go from, you know, memory to memory, it makes it a little even more blurry whether they were actually in a relationship or not.
Fair enough. Matt, your thoughts on that? Or?
I would say, I don't know, they did kind of jump from, you know, day to day, and it kind of worked for me, but I don't know, we were talking about, did this film even end right, you know, and when he finds this new girl, it's a sense of he's getting over this whole thing. That kind of, I don't know, did you feel like it was a happy ending or not? I don't know.
I almost didn't, and the reason, and I know it sounds weird, because, I mean, he may have found somebody new. He may be destined to repeat the same sort of heartbreak and stuff all over it. We don't know, and so let's leave it open, hoping that. But at the same time, I felt like she was just almost the rebound girl, because I'm like, day 487, I don't know, whatever it was.
Yeah.
We have him and Summer sitting on a park bench going, she's like, I'm married now, and I, you know, blah, blah, blah. I wasn't going to commit to anybody, but then I just did, and blah. And this kid is traumatized at this point. It looks like somebody's just thrown it down to the ground and stomped on it a few times. And then all of a sudden, he's just like, well, I guess I'll get a job. Oh, new girl. Let's start this over again. I was like, and I almost felt more bad for the girl than I did happy for him.
Because he didn't even know that she was engaged she was even dating. Because they went to a coworker's wedding and they danced together. And he was like, oh, maybe I have another chance back with her. But then she's like, she has a wedding ring on. He's like, oh, you're married. And she's like, yeah. So I don't know.
Yeah,
That kind of was a bummer for me. And then when he meets that girl at the end, she's like, he's like, do you want to go get some coffee? She's like, oh, actually, I'm busy. And then he's like, oh, well. And then she's like, actually, I'll go out with you. So it's kind of like, is this girl going to do the same thing? I don't know.
Well, I mean, first of all, back to that park bench, or back to the dance scene, she danced with him, but she's already, you know, engaged.
Mm-hmm.
I think that part just kind of adds to Summer's personality. Like, you never really know what friend and, you know, more than friend is with her in this movie. And that's okay. But onto the ending scene, first of all, I got to give a shout-out to my favorite baseball player, Derek Jeter. His fiancée, Minka Kelly, is in this movie, and she is Autumn, the girl at the end. And so I just want to give a shout-out to Derek Jeter there. But anyway, I actually really liked the ending just because it shows that you can move on. It shows that it brings closure to summer and, you know, brings an entrance to autumn, I guess, if you want to be cheesy about it. And,
how cliched was that, though, to be? I mean, that almost made me gag a little bit when I heard that. I mean, I could have done without that, but then again, that was the whole quirky balance of the film, so.
Exactly. And I just thought, like, you know, even though she, even though Autumn does say no at first, but then, you know, even though she says, yeah, and then she goes on to say yes, I think, maybe that could, you know, make somebody wonder, is she gonna do the same thing to him again? But, you know, to me, that just made me think, like, it appeared, the way she looked at him, appeared that she really, like, you know, was interested in him from the beginning. And so, it appeared more to me as, like, maybe she was just, you know, unsure if she wanted to, like, commit to a relationship, and then maybe she just at the end said, you know what, I'm going to do it. And I'm not really sure what she was thinking. I think that's a story for another time. I think that it doesn't pertain to the summer story. But I do think that all that scene was doing was, like I said earlier, it was just bringing it into the summer story. And what happens after that is not part of this movie. That's not what we're, you know, the focus is. The focus is the 500 days of summer, and it's just one relationship. That's a different relationship, and, you know, it was the last day of this, of the summer relationship, but it's a different story in itself.
It's kind of one of those aw moments that leaves your heart like, oh, I wonder what's going to happen with it. Like, you know, it did seem a little cliche, but it's, I don't know, kind of threw off, or went along with the whole kind of theme of the movie, how it's kind of quirky and corny, and I don't know, it didn't throw me off really at all, but I liked it. I thought it was okay.
All right, and you mentioned we keep mentioning, like, the quirky and weird things. One of the things that I thought worked very well, at least to me, was the younger sister. I found that absolutely hilarious. He was going to, like, the little sister's soccer matches and being like, what do I do? You know, and it was just this complete role reversal that worked very well for me for some reason.
I thought that was hilarious as well, just because, you know, especially the girl being much younger, but also having such a, you know, sense of humor and a sassiness about her, and would just say, like, don't be a pussy. And it just kind of, like, cracked me up.
And at the same time, I never quite knew what Tom really expected to get out of her, because when she would offer him advice, he was almost mortified at the fact that she's like, well, from my experience with, you know, whoever from Germany and this person from so-and-so, and he's just sitting with his jaw about hitting the ground. To me, I thought that was even better, because I was laughing because I couldn't figure out what Tom really, you know, expected to get out of her, because he got an answer and he was amazed. Maybe he was just looking for someone to listen to him and instead got advice. I don't know. Any thoughts on that, or did you guys see it as him just wanting an ear to talk to someone to talk to, or was he actually, you know, going to her looking for advice?
You know, Jason, I kind of thought it was just kind of like the classic case of a guy just telling his problems to his dog. You know, like, so everybody just wants somebody to talk to, and he knows his sister might not, maybe he's not even caring about the advice his sister gives him. Maybe he is more worried about the fact that his sister has so much dating experience at that young of an age. But I think the main thing is that was just a scene of him just rattling off his problems to somebody just to be able to tell them to somebody.
And, you know, like, normally a guy would go to maybe his friends, but his friends in this movie are really, like, weird, and you would never go to them for dating advice. So maybe it was his escape to, you know, someone to talk to.
I don't know. Well, wait, wasn't it the one guy?
One guy had been dating this girl for like 7 years or something.
Okay.
And he was kind of a weirdo.
Yeah.
But he was the guy from Criminal Minds, correct? Does anybody know who I'm talking?
Over our heads, but I'm sure some.
Yeah.
Know what you're talking about.
A TV show, Isaac. You know, the television. You turn it on and you watch things. No.
These days we don't have TVs.
I know. It's on CBS, I believe, which is like the old person station or something, isn't it? You know, I don't know. But yeah, I believe the one that was happily married now or whatever, and that he'd been is off of that show. And then the other guy has completely slipped my mind as to who he was. So
he's the guy that got really drunk at the karaoke, and he's like. I think
he said he hadn't had a girlfriend since the 7th grade, and they dated
for 30 minutes.
Oh, yeah, 30 minutes.
All right, all right.
Yeah,
I do remember that. So,
yeah. So I thought, I don't know. She really worked for me. His little sister. I thought those scenes were really funny and added a lot to the movie.
Agreed.
Okay, agreed. I think that we can all agree on that one.
Yep.
So, Isaac, any other last words on 500 Days of Summer? Do you suggest it? See it? Skip it? What's your thoughts, guys?
I'd say see it, definitely.
I would say definitely see it as well. A great movie.
You know, and I'm going to say see it as well. I say that with a slight bit of hesitation. Obviously, you guys knew I had my issues with it, but, you know, I still enjoyed it. Going with that, though, I mean, I've seen other relationship movies I thought worked better. I'm partial to, you know, maybe I'm partial to John Cusack playing the, you know, pathetic sap type person, you know, so High Fidelity ranks up there on my list. Neurotic Woody Allen and Annie Hall definitely sticks up there. It's those same sort of things.
This is definitely a romantic movie you don't need to bring tissues to, we'll say that.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
It's kind of one that you'll think about afterwards to think if you liked it or not. Jason, did you like the movie like right after you saw it, or did you not like it right after you saw it? Did it take you some time to think about it?
Well, I actually believe right after I watched it, I went and threw up a Facebook status that just said, "Well, that was 500 days of something," you know, and just I had no real huge love. I didn't hate it either, maybe it was because someone had been building this movie up to me as like the greatest movie ever. That may have had something to do with it as well.
Yeah, I think I know somebody like that as well who was building it up.
So I think that helped, you know, maybe change my opinion on it a bit. But as I, you know, looked back on it and kept thinking about it a couple days later, I was like, you know what? I think I really liked it. But I never brought myself to write in a review because I didn't know if I had enough to really spit out in a full review other than maybe just like a conversation with you guys, which is why we're kind of doing this. So, all right, guys. Well, any other last thoughts before we call the 500 Days of Summer thing all done or call it quits?
I think we covered most of it, Jason.
All right.
Say so as well.
All right. Well, Matt, thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right. We'll talk to you later. That'll about do it for this episode of the BoxOfficeBoredom.com movie podcast. If you liked what you heard, let us know by emailing us at boxofficeboredom@gmail.com. And if you want to access our thoughts 24/7, go to www.boxofficeboredom.com and check out the over 500 movie reviews posted on the site. Until next time, this is Jason.
And this is Isaac.
Say happy movie watching, guys.